From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan or on demand as a podcast. It's Tuesday, October 24th, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gunathchiyishawa Salamat, for joining the conversation. On today's show, Theatre Alaska and their upcoming production of Lucas Naith's A Doll's House Part 2, the follow-up to Ibsen's classic tale. Tomorrow marks the anniversary of the sinking of the SS Princess Sophia. We'll chat about the remembrance scheduled for tomorrow at noon. And Miss Gigi Monroe will be here to tell us all about the upcoming Miss Gay Alaska America pageant happening in November. Those conversations, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha ani kak gunish cheesh.
Ako'y sa'yo, ikaw ay akin. Ganda mo sa paningin. Ako ngayon nag-iisa. Sana ay tabihan na. Sa ilalim ng puting ilaw, sa dilaw ng buwan, pakinggan mo ang aking sigaw. Sa mabuhay ng malungkot.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That was Juan Carlos. As we continue to celebrate music during Filipino-American History Month, as well as the launch of Maga Cuento, the project from KTOO News, exploring the history and current life of Filipinos in Juno. It's available on your podcast app of choice, with 3 episodes out now and 2 more planned over the coming Fridays. Also, there is an ongoing exhibit at the Juno Douglas City Museum entitled Maga Cuento, Filipinos in Juno. For more on the podcast, visit ktoo.org. And for the museum exhibit, visit juno.org/museum. So, you may have heard the phrase, the slam heard around the world, which refers to Nora Helmer leaving at the end of Henrik Ibsen's classic, A Doll's House. What happens to Nora after has been the subject of much conjecture throughout the literature and theater worlds for almost a century and a half. But what happens when Nora knocks on that door 15 years later after she left? Well, that's the subject of Lucas Naith's A Doll's House, Part 2, opening next week from Theatre Alaska. Here to chat about it, our artistic director, Flordelino Lagandino.
Hello.
Hi, Gunathchiyish for being here.
Thanks.
Salama. And also actors Marta Lastufka. Hi, Marta.
Hello.
And Jake Wade.
Hey, boss.
Gunathchiyish. It's so good to have you all here. So let's get the details out of the way first. Like, let's just talk about, we'll say it now, we'll say it at the end too.
Yeah. But
when does it open and where is it running? Because I know Theatre Alaska does that wonderful thing where they're performing out in the community, So where are you going to be at this time?
We're going to be all over the place. It starts November 1st to the 19th. Go to www.theateralaska.org to check out all the different times and locations, because it's really literally everywhere. We start at the Filipino Community Hall. We go to the Douglas Public Library. We go to the Lecture Hall of the APK, Juno Arts and Culture Center, all over the place, Juno Pioneer Home. And we're also going to like the both of the high schools, at Thunder Mountain High School and JDHS.
Oh, wow.
So all over. But so go to www.theateralaska.org for all that stuff.
And theater in that website is spelled with an E-R.
With an E-R.
Right. Which is actually kind of cool, because I always heard it as like the E-R is the place that you do it.
Yeah.
And R-E is the thing that you do when it's spelled theater with an R-E, like Perseverance Theater. But it's interesting that Theater Alaska is E-R, because you are sort of a community-based, you go all over.
Yeah.
It's a place where you're making the theater, and it's a challenge to do it in different spaces and fun things like that. So you open next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday at the Filipino Community Hall.
Okay. So if people want to go opening night, that is the place
to
go.
That is the place to be.
And then you run for a couple weeks, right?
3 weekends, actually, up to the 19th. So again, we're all over the place. I'll just shout out the couple places, the other places we're going to.
Mm-hmm.
I said the Pioneer Home, Mendenhall Valley Library, Church of the Holy Trinity, Sea Alaska Heritage Institute Clan House, the Glory Hall, Juno Makerspace, and UAS Egan Library, in addition to the other places.
Okay, that is a good list.
It's a great list.
So
I'm sort of taking that all in myself.
Jake's like, we're performing where?
Right, it's a lot.
So that's an interesting challenge, though, for the actors, right? I mean, this play, I've seen some pictures of various different productions, and it can be done pretty sparsely and things like that. So is that going to be conducive for this in terms of moving the space around for you both in terms of how the play is performed?
I think that, you know, as actors, Marta and I and Becky and Maddie were like, throw it at us, throw all the furniture at us, if that's an analogy, like, bring it on. We're ready for all of it, because we have established the home, the space, the world that we're in.
Yeah.
Fully. So we're just ready. We're excited to bring this to the public. This is going to be something else. And to see Marta Lastavka on the stage I know, every day that I go to work.
We are waiting
to work across from her. It's incredible. So yeah, I mean, bring it on. Like, we're not scared of any of it.
Cause it's really, Marta, it's really about the relationships, right? Like, I mean, you're building relationships. That's what this play is based on. So the space, it matters, because it will be part of where you are, but really it's the connection that you're making with the other folks on stage.
I think I'm excited about all the different spaces, because that really will infuse what we're doing. We're going to create a home no matter where we are. And I think there is that element of the community in the play. It's like just outside of those relationships. But yeah, it's all about relationship, which I guess all plays are about relationships, but this is really about relationships.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's get to the story a little bit. Can we provide, I think most people out there probably have either had to read A Doll's House, the Ibsen classic, or maybe has seen a production of it. Have you ever done a production of it, Marta?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. And Jake, have you been in?
No.
Okay.
No.
There's great parts for both of you in that.
younger.
A little old for it.
We missed that.
You can be one of the other characters, maybe. Yeah, you could be Krog's dad or something like that. So the story of A Doll's House, the first one, and this is sort of, I mean, it's called part two and it is a sequel, but it's by a different author. It's kind of different style. It's got a different tone. We'll talk all about that. But like The Doll's House, can we sum up just quickly what the story of that is? What happens in the first play?
Well, I think
director flirtily.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's interesting. I just saw it on Broadway recently was that Laura Linney? I can't remember. It was a really interesting play. It's a great play. Basically what happens is that, Nora has borrowed some money from Krogstad in order to save her husband. He's been feeling ill. Her father was on his deathbed. She borrowed some money, and Krogstad finds out that she actually
forged
his name on the loan application or whatever that was. And so it's all about what that lie is and how it unravels their marriage and the tensions that were already there. There's all, you know, I was reading it the other day, and it was like at the beginning of the play, it talks about, hey, my little squirrel, hey, my little, you know, there's this way of talking to Nora where kind of diminishes her. She has to take care of the family. She has to take care of the kids, and she wants something more. And that's the reason why her leaving that marriage and wanting something more, it created that big stir, because women were simply not allowed to leave their marriages during that time period.
Yeah.
That's the basic story. That's the basic story of a lot of Ibsen plays. There's something fundamentally wrong that happens, and they have to try to correct it, or the whole situation unravels.
And I think what's helpful as the launch pad into our play is that Nora leaves Torvald after she realizes that his entire moral code that he's been upholding for as long as they'd known each other, he throws it away in an instant to try and save the family. And she loses respect for him and makes an immediate decision, an ice hot decision. Like, there is no doubt in her mind that she's leaving. And I think what's interesting to take up, and these plays are written 120 years apart,
yeah,
is that the style is completely different. And what does happen to her? And as you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of people love to speculate and chat after seeing a production of The Doll's House. What would happen to Nora Helmer?
But you're going to tell us.
And, you know, and it's like, well, in this world, the world that she's in, she's probably going to have to become a seamstress, a secretary. She'll take her own life. All of these horrible endings that people speculate. And what if she is this exalted figure who's has celebrity and success and money, and she bursts into the door 15 years later and now encounters Torvald?
It's interesting because, you know, Martha, at the end of the play, I mean, the title of the play, Doll's House, right? And she refers to that, like, I realize I'm just a doll. I've been treated like a doll. I've been treated like an object. And this thing that Jake was mentioning about Torvald, he finds out about this loan and that you forged the signature. And then he's really sort of selfish and trying to save himself. And she realizes that he didn't stand up for her. He didn't help her in any way. And he never will, right? And so she leaves, and you know what's interesting? I was looking into this, and the original, Ibsen had to change the original ending of A Doll's House in Germany, because they didn't want that to happen. So in the original production, she doesn't leave. She's led down to her kids, and she falls on the floor in a ball of tears, and that's the end, and the curtain comes down.
Yeah.
And he hated that.
That's the real tragedy, that his own moral code was malleable.
Yeah, absolutely. Because to get the play produced, course, movies and other productions have always used the original ending that he intended, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like you're saying, Jake, back then, you know, a woman to leave was probably going to either be destitute, become a prostitute, or was not going to be able to be successful, right? So we've set up that kind of, obviously the play is great. Go read it if you've never read it. I'm sure most people are familiar with the story. So Martha, so what happens to Nora? Where does she end up, and why does she come back to Torvald and knock on the door?
Gosh, I don't know if I should say why, because I want people to see the play. But I think...
Well, we know who she is, right? We can talk about what's happened to her.
The one thing that she wasn't allowed in the earlier version of the play is autonomy mm-hmm. and respect and, self-respect, self-direction, self... I mean, women were subservient to everything and everyone. So in this play... She's not. In this place, she's not. But it's also not not without struggle, because everything in her culture, in their culture, and I'd argue our culture, a lot of what is still set in stone are some of these very, very old ideas about... a woman's place in society. I mean, I say we're not free of it completely. So I think the play has a lot of resonance culturally and in terms of relationships and a woman's relationship with her family, like all of these things. It's pretty relevant and interesting and emotional. I think that a lot of things that the play brings up in a dramatic, but also a very human, funny way, like I think people will, you know, see themselves every now and again, and it's a surprising play also for me not to finish a sentence, but that's
all
kind of how the play is too. There's a lot of ideas in it. It is a little play, but it is a huge play. It's jam-packed.
Big ideas. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm talking with the cast and director of A Doll's House Part 2, opening next week from Theater Alaska. You can go to theateralaska.org for more information on dates and times. We're talking to actors Jake Wade, Marta Lastufka, and director Flordolino Lagandino. So you mentioned the humor, which I know a couple of other of Lucas Nath's plays, and he is very... sharp-witted. And I'm imagining that the back and forth between the two of you, as well as I know you have one of the kids that you left behind is grown now, and she's in the play. And also the household, is she considered a maid or a house, like she's the helper of the house, right?
Yeah.
A nanny helper. Yeah. She's also, so there's four characters in the play. So how do you handle this new sort of, you know, or is there a challenge to this particular kind of language that you're dealing with in this sort of currently written kind of style?
Well, it's interesting that it is very funny, and it's written definitely in a 21st century vernacular and cadence that sort of we understand. And what that tells me is that Lucas Nath, the playwright, really wants the actors to take ownership of it and to take on these roles. And I feel like, and I've sort of talked with Marta about this, like, I think it's probably more important for us to be Jake and Marta. Mm-hmm. And especially in Juno, where we have a little bit of a familiarity with the audience here, because it's a real sparring thing and people start to show up like, ooh, let's see these two go at it, right? See if they still got any, you know, fuel in the tanks as actors, right? So it's a little personal that way. So you don't have to reach very far to connect with the language, and that's fun. There's a poetry to the language. There's a verse, kind of like Shakespeare writes, and a rhythm to the language that sort of, once you've read it and read it and read it, it sort of becomes a part of you the same way Shakespeare does, or a song. When you're saying, so when you say a wrong word, it stands out, it pops out in your head, and you know that you've got to go back and look at that. Very fun to play with this language.
Yeah. So I have a question for you, Marta. How did you decide to do this play?
Yeah.
I know that the one of the last things I know you did was something that Flor de Lino had done years ago with the opera.
Symphony, yeah.
So is it Flor de Lino that keeps talking you into these projects, or was there something specific about this one that was like, yes, I must do?
Well, I didn't talk into Sweeney Todd was the last time that we worked together.
Which was like 10 years ago.
It's a long time ago. Yeah. It was 10 years ago.
And then the last straight play I did was almost 20 years ago. And for the life of me, I don't know. I like the script. I like Theater Alaska. I like their mission. There was just a chink in the armor that Flor de Lino managed to fit his sword into.
It hit you at the right time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really do like the play. I love this group of people. It's great to be in a play with Jake again. The first play we did, I think he was still in high school. It was a long time ago. And Becky, too. That's
Becky
lovely.
Orford.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Maddie's fantastic, young, new actor. It's, I don't know, I think it's a pretty great opportunity to do a script this smart and emotional, super rigorous, a big challenge, mm-hmm. with an intimate group of people that has a mission to reach every corner of Juno. So, I think it was a combination of all of that made me decide.
Well,
to do
I know that the Juno audiences are the better for it. Those folks who have seen you perform are going to be excited to know that you're doing this play.
Absolutely,
thanks, Austin.
It's going to be a wonderful experience. I tried to do a play last year after retiring, basically, and broke my
Boston,
hip.
So
don't break your hip.
No, please, God, don't
get the play finished before the ice comes. That's my advice.
Oh,
okay, so I have another. This is an interesting question that I was thinking about this. Both, I mean, and in some of the theory on the first play is yes, it's using a woman to have a lot of the story in terms of the individualism kind of thing. And some argue that it was really not necessarily just about women, but about each person recognizing their own value and sort of, you know, taking that upon themselves, not being beholden to somebody else and being treated in a bad way, right? And of course, not to diminish, you know, anything about that, but then Lucas is bringing this play back. But my question is it problematic that both of these plays were written by men?
I don't know that it's problematic. I think it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in terms of making art, I'm more of the school that anybody should be allowed to say whatever they want and then be prepared for the response.
Mm.
So do I wish it was written by a woman and it would be a completely different play if it was written by a woman? But I think he's done a really good job. I think he brings a very sensitive eye to a woman's struggles in this culture, in this century. And I don't know. I'm glad he wrote the play.
It's
a bigger thing. It's a bigger discussion.
Do I wish there were more female
playwrights?
Course.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I love to be in a play revisiting A Doll's House written by a woman. Yeah, and I hope that person comes along. But this play is a wonderful play. And I think, you know, I think we are in it. I mean, my perspective in being in a play written by a young white man, that's in there. I think about it, and I think the audience will think about it as well. But I think it's a cool play.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. I mean, Edward Albee and... you know, wrote some of the greatest female characters in literature.
Ibsen, Tennessee Williams.
Yeah,
I mean, We don't want people not to write plays. Right. We want them to write plays.
But we also want more women to write plays, absolutely. Of course. Yeah.
More so everybody.
More everybody, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Fiordalino, why did you choose this play and why did you choose to do it now?
I mean, I think a lot of what you're talking about, women's issues, we actually selected to do this play maybe like 3 years ago. I brought it to Jake to look at. As you know, we have a company of actors and artists, and I regularly like throw ideas at them. Hey, what about this thing? And what about this play? I knew about this play, saw it on Broadway, really loved the language, really loved what it was talking about in terms of a woman's journey and understanding herself and understanding what the world is around her and oppressing her, I would say. So, and knowing that in today's day and age, this is still the same. I think that's important to recognize what Jake was saying too. The language is contemporary, partly because he's saying this is something that happens even now, even today. So I think that that really resonates. So like that sort of thing. And then, as you know, with Theater Alaska, we have a really good company, obviously, but we love working on plays that highlight the actors. Mm. And this is a play that definitely does that and highlights that story. It's just, you know, four actors really going after what they want. We talk about that every day. What does this person want? What is their objective? What is their need? Because there's a really strong reason why Nora comes back. You have to come check out the play as to why. And then there's epiphanies that she has throughout the play. And that's really exciting. How does a person transform throughout the play? What does she learn? How does she different from the beginning of the play to the end of the play? These are really fascinating things that we are able to see on stage.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's Theater Alaska's production of Doll's House Part 2. It opens next Wednesday, November 1st at Filipino Community Hall. Runs for 3 weekends. And there's more information available at theateralaska.org. I really want to thank you all for coming in today and sharing a little bit about this play. I think the best marketing for this play and the best plug we can have is what you've done today, which is basically what happens when Nora knocks on the door.
Yeah.
Right? Who is she? Why does she come back? What's Torvald been doing for all these 15 mm-hmm. years since she left? Yeah. Grown kids now that she left behind? The ramifications of all of that. And from what I know about Lucas Nath's plays, he does a really good job of exploring that in terms of getting into depth about consequences, mm-hmm. right? Consequences and what happens next.
Yeah. I was listening to something that he was talking about that. And, you know, during your workshops, he gives actors different options and he reads different, you know, he goes as many different ways as possible. And then also he had apparently Norwegian dramaturgs come in. And then they would like poke holes on his play. It's like, what about this? What about this? So like, he's really examined this. And so the language that's on, you know, the words that they're saying are really examined and I think land on each other in a really powerful way. So I'm excited for the community to see this play.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all for coming in. Jake Wade, Marta Lastufka, and Fiordalino Lagandino. Theater Alaska's production of A Doll's House opening next week. Theateralaska.org for more info.
Thanks,
for being here.
Thank you very much.
Up next, the SS Princess Sophia sank on October 25th, 1918. Tomorrow, there will be a remembrance. We'll chat with Mary Lou Spartz about that next on Juno Afternoon from KTO. But first, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. For something as simple as one atom of sodium and one atom of chloride, salt is complicated. Season evenly with salt, one chef instructs. Sprinkle with salt, says another. And what about the classic salt to taste? There are good reasons for this vague verbiage, like personal preference. Other ingredients are also a factor. The butter I use might be salted while yours might be sweet cream. Then there is the kind of salt you prefer. Table salt, fine sea salt, Malden sea salt, Selgree, kosher. Take your pick.
page 43.
According to the book Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, 1 tablespoon of table salt weighs 18.6 grams, whereas the famously flaky Malden sea salt weighs just 8.4 grams. Given this difference, you can see how you'd need to use far less table salt by volume in a given dish. Even in the same category of salt, variations are notable. A tablespoon of Morton's Kosher with its small, compact grains weighs 14.75 grams, while light, fluffy Diamond Crystal brand is just 9.75 grams. The less dense the salt, the longer you sprinkle. But how long exactly? Chef Monique Gorham of Alyeska Resort in Girdwood, Alaska, gives this bold and unusual piece of advice in her recipe for halibut in white wine cream sauce. Season until it makes you uncomfortable. Most cooks, she says, don't salt halibut and other thick cuts of meat or seafood nearly enough. So when you think you should stop salting that halibut, don't. Let yourself get nervous. Sweat a little, just not on the food. Sweat's pretty salty after all. Find the full recipe for Chef Monique's halibut in white wine cream sauce at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Clene Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who travel to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. We'd like to take a moment and say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gwyneth Cheesh to Vera Starbart, who planted the idea of making it super place specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Petershore, who created so much of the beautiful structure. Ishmael Hope, who gave us additional ideas, and Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Some may be familiar with the sinking of the USS, or the SS Princess Sophia, also known as the Unknown Titanic of the West Coast. At least 353 passengers and crew lost their lives when it sank almost 105 years ago tomorrow. And tomorrow there will be a remembrance of this tragic event. Here to tell us about it is Mary Lou Spartz. Hi.
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 Boston.
How are you?
Well, all things considered, not bad.
Awesome. Well, you know what's funny is that when you called me last week, you were like, I don't know if you remember, but we did a play together. Yes, we did a play together in 1991 at Perseverance Theater called Amigos Blue Guitar.
Yes.
I was a young man of, I think I was 20, I don't know. I was early 20, I was definitely not, I was 20 or 21, I think. And you were like, I don't know if you'll remember me. And I was like, of course I'll remember you. Of course, Mary Lou Spartz, she's a legend in Juno.
Oh, I hope I'm not a legend yet.
You're a living legend for sure. So, all right. So I know we're here to talk about this tragic event, the sinking of the SS Princess Sophia. It happened 105 years ago.
Yes.
And it really sort of ran aground on the 23rd and on the 24th. They were struggling. And then it finally sank on the 25th.
Yes.
Yeah. So why do we take the opportunity to have this remembrance?
Well, I suppose, you know, it's still, as far as I know, remains the largest loss of life in the Pacific Northwest. So, as you said, there were 353 people that lost their lives, and no one survived.
Mm.
It was, you know, it was just... nothing that they were able to do seemed to help.
Yeah, it just totally didn't do anything. And where did this happen again?
It was on Vanderbilt Reef in Lynn Canal.
Okay.
And Vanderbilt Reef is, you and I think of a reef as kind of a coral reef, at least I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what this is. This is sort of the top of a mountain.
Mm.
It's just a bunch of rocks. And that's what she hit. That's the only thing you could hit in Lynn Canal, but she hit it hard.
Do they know? Did they ever find out why it hit it? Or,
well, she was off course.
Mm.
She came down from Skagway, and she was late.
Mm-hmm.
And they were pushing it, and there was a big storm, big snowstorm.
Mm.
And she was about a mile, maybe mile and a half off course in Lynn Canal, and she struck.
Oh, wow. That is very tragic.
And it was big, big storm. And the wind was just ferocious. And it just wedged her right into that rock.
Mm.
Just the keel just went right in.
Do you think this moniker that it has, the unknown Titanic of the West Coast, do you think that's accurate?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Of course, the Titanic had, you know, was so it was such a horrific story that it overshadowed the sinking in Alaska, in Alaska waters.
Hmm.
And and the other thing that happened was when the remains of those that were found. And recovered along Shelter Island and all along the beaches there leading up to Shelter Island. when they arrived in Vancouver for distribution to their various family members and friends in Canada, it was November 11th.
Mm.
When that happened. And the big story was, of course, the end of World War I.
Mm.
So the story about the Princess Sophia and the return return of the caskets to Canada and then some to America. That story hit the back pages, not the front pages.
Mm.
So
that's kind of sad.
Well, yes, I thought so.
Yeah. So this remembrance that's happening tomorrow, this is something that it's great because, you know, I think I've heard that phrase that, you know, what keeps folks alive is remembering them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so having this, even if people don't remember it or don't have folks who are involved in it, remembering this piece of history is pretty important, I would think. Yeah?
Well, I think so.
Yeah. And so tell us, where is the remembrance happening tomorrow?
We will, those who wish to, will meet at the gravesite of Walter Harper and Frances Wells, his bride, who are buried there at Evergreen Cemetery. Together, and Father Gordon Blue of the Holy Trinity Church, the Episcopal Church, will lead the brief ceremony, commemorative ceremony, and then you know we will just remember for a few moments the people that are buried in the cemetery. There are about 22 people buried there.
Oh wow!
And the Harpers, Walter Harper and Francis Wells, of course, are the most probably most notable of that group, and so that's what's going to happen.
And were Walter Harper and Francis Wells part? Were they passengers?
They were. They died on the ship.
They died on the ship. Okay.
Yeah, it was on their honeymoon trip.
Oh.
They were married in Fort Yukon.
Mm.
And they were headed down to the States to visit. She was from Pennsylvania. And Walter Harper was from, he was an Athabascan and Irish descent.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to meet, I believe that he was meeting her family for the first time. And they were headed to Pennsylvania. And then the idea was that they would go to France, and he would drive an ambulance in the war. This was 1918, and she's a nurse, and she would nurse.
Wow, that is really sad.
Oh yeah, it is.
I mean, I'm sure there's of 353 people. I'm sure all of them are sad, but to have honeymooners, you know, having just been married and their whole lives ahead of them, and all of that, I think it's appropriate to have a remembrance.
Well, it's, I've always thought so.
Yeah.
And the families decided rather than to separate these two newlyweds in death, that they would bury them here rather than separate them. And she would go to Pennsylvania and he would probably go north to his family.
Mm, I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Mary Lou, it's so awesome to see you.
Oh, it's great.
And I'm really glad that you came in to tell us about this. Father Gordon Blue, the Holy Trinity pastor, will be presiding over the ceremony tomorrow. It's a brief remembrance of the SS Princess Sophia. Uh-huh. And it's at the gravesite of Walter Harper and Francis Wells at the Evergreen Cemetery. It's going to be at noon tomorrow, Wednesday, October 25th. Yeah.
Yes, and there is limited parking. I don't know how many people are aware that the entrance to Evergreen Cemetery is really on Glacier, right across from the middle school, Marie Drake.
Okay.
It's on the right, but then there's very limited parking. But there's parking along there if you wish to. Just wanted to advise about that.
That's absolutely important for people to know.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Mary Lou, for coming in. And wow, it's great to see you. I haven't seen you in a number of years. So I really appreciate you coming in and telling us about this really important event.
Well, it's so kind of you to have include us.
Of course. Absolutely. Gwyneth Cheech for being here.
Thank you, Boston.
Up next, Miss Gigi Monroe will tell us about the upcoming pageant Miss Gay Alaska America. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
This is Bird Note. Yellow-eyed juncos can be found shuffling through leaf litter in the southeast corner of Arizona and central Mexico, searching for tasty seeds from pines and oaks. And although these fire-eyed birds stay within the same general area year-round, they sometimes make a migration of sorts, not from north to south, but from the high mountains to the lowlands or the other way around. It's called altitudinal migration. In the warm summer months, some yellow-eyed juncos prefer to nest at higher elevations where their nests on the ground are less vulnerable to predators. But as winter approaches, the scarcity of food in the snowy peaks often pushes the juncos back down to the desert floor. This altitudinal migration is common for many bird species that live along mountain slopes. Another intriguing migrant, the American dipper, catches its meals by diving into the frigid streams of mountain ranges in the Northwest. In colder seasons, when their watery cafeterias freeze solid, dippers migrate downslope and downstream, where flowing water continues to provide a bounty of tasty morsels. For BirdNote, I'm Ariana Rimmel. To learn more about the many quirky ways birds migrate, start at our website, birdnote.org.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Alaska has never had a preliminary pageant connected to a national pageant system. And Miss Gigi Monroe thought it was time for that to change. The Miss Gay Alaska America pageant is set for November 17th and 18th here in Juneau at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Welcome now to share more about this is Miss Gigi Monroe. Ah, hi, Gigi.
Hi, hi Boston. Hi, hi. Everybody.
It's so good to have you back on the show to talk about this pretty awesome event. How did you get this going? How did this come about?
Yeah. Okay. So this is a really awesome, huge new thing, and I'm really excited about it. I started off, you know, performing 1,000 years ago, and I started in the pageants, which is a huge part of drag, the drag world generally. Drag pageantry has been around for many decades, and there's one particular national pageant that's very popular. It's 52 years old. It's called Miss Gay America. And what that pageant is all about is, you know, not only perfecting and polishing your craft as an entertainer on stage, but also being a representative in the community and conducting yourself as a leader and, you know, as an advocate and someone who uses not only their platform as a stage performer, but also, you know, out in the community and working for causes that they believe in. You know, very similar to other pageants, but just with a drag twist, you know? So this particular pageant and all national drag pageants have never had Alaska representatives, which is really pretty nuts. So in order to fix that, what I did was become a promoter for the system. And by doing that, buying into their franchise, I established the Miss Gay Alaska America title. So what that means is that we'll produce a preliminary pageant here in Juneau next month, and we will send our winner and first runner-up to nationals in January, where they'll compete alongside queens from around the country for the title of Miss Gay America.
Wow, that's great. And so I'm assuming that anybody in the state can register for this pageant. It's just taking place here in Juneau in the capital city, which is kind of cool.
Yes. And, you know, one of the things that I'm really passionate about is making sure anyone who's interested has access to come down here and compete, or come up here and compete, or wherever they're coming in from. And so we're sponsoring the travel costs associated with coming to compete. So that's not a barrier for folks. And
what? That's amazing.
You know, we really want to. Yeah. So, you know, if you want to compete and you live in Sitka, we'll fly you over and put you up so that you don't have those costs associated, because, you know, putting together a pageant package is, you know, there's always expenses and costs in that. And we just want to make sure that, you know, the Juneau queens don't have an unfair advantage in that respect.
Sure. So who should consider registering for this? And I'm sure there is details on the website. Why don't you give out the website now as you tell us
Yeah, sure.
who should go there and when they should register?
Right. It's open registration until 2 weeks before the pageant, which is November 17th and 18th. So our registration closes November 2nd. And the website is MissGayAlaskaAmerica.com. And there's a contestant section on that site with all the details and a registration form. But it's basically open to any female impersonator, drag queen in the state of Alaska, as long as they reside here. That was an important piece of it. Sometimes there are preliminary contests in other states that are open to any contestant who wants to travel there and win that title. But I decided to make this pageant a closed pageant, so it's really just for us.
It's Alaska specific. Yes. And it's Alaska specific female performers. I mean, female drag queens, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great.
One of the other terms, you know, often in pageantry, there's the term female impersonator that's used instead of drag queen, but like they, you know, they're the same thing. They mean the same thing.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. And so I'm just curious because I know that the Kings of Juno have also been becoming a thing. Is there another pageant that is for the Kings or no?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And, you know, and I know that it's so weird to everybody else in the world, but in Juno, we're all just super integrated here. Everywhere else is very separate. So, of course, we will have a King pageant preliminary as well. The Miss Gay America system doesn't have a division for Kings, but another national system does. So we're setting that up. They just had their national contest last weekend, actually. So what we're going to do is hold that prelim in early spring. We're still looking for looking at dates, but it should be in March or April. And that will be for Kings of all over Alaska. In the same deal, we send our first runner up and our winner to nationals to compete.
Well, that's really cool. I love that's going to be happening in the spring. But we're concerned with this one. And so what will be happening? What are some of the events that will take place over the course of the two nights?
So the competition part is super fun. The contestants have to compete on stage in the categories of talent, which is a 7-minute block of time that they get to do whatever they want with very few restrictions. So they'll either put together a routine like you might see at a regular drag show, but kind of polished and amped up a little bit. It may be more theatrical. It may be dancing. It may be live singing. It may be comedy. It could be a speech. It could be all kinds of things. And then they also have the evening gown competition, which is all about that poise and elegance and grace and stage presence. There is an onstage question, which all of the contestants are asked the same question. And then they, you know, they have to give their answer and they're scored on how they deliver their answer in public speaking and engagement and all of those kinds of skills. And then they're also judged in a category the audience doesn't see, and that's interview. So before the pageant begins, the panel of judges will sit down with each contestant and conduct an interview where they, you know, just get to know the contestant and why they are interested in winning the title and what they might do with it if they won. So it's a really interesting set of categories that we'll get to see. Plus, we'll have the current reigning Miss Gay America, Tatiana Voce from Washington, D.C. will be traveling and she'll be our honored guest all weekend long. So we'll get to see her perform and get to know her a little bit. We also have three other former Miss Gay Americas, one from 22, one from 19 and 14, who will be with us to entertain as well. So we're going to get incredible world-class drag entertainment from some of these folks. And then we have returning one of our Glitz former headliners, Calexis Davenport, will be coming back and she will also be entertaining all weekend long. So the entertainment value is just going to be through the roof between the competition and our special guests. It's going to be an incredible show. So
that
Friday night
great.
Is preliminary night and Saturday is final night. What we're doing is selling weekend passes. That'll get you into both. Or if you can only make one night or the other, we do have single tickets available. All of those are on sale now on the MiskayAlaskaAmerica.com website.
Okay. Well, we have
and
to go, Gigi.
Sponsorship information.
Yeah, sponsorship information, registration information, or if you want to just attend, you can find all that information at MiskayAlaskaAmerica.com. Gigi, thank you so much. You are an icon.
Oh, thank you, Boston. Likewise.
I'll talk to you soon. Good cheese. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a terrific rest of your Tuesday. On tomorrow's show, Cancer Connections Annual Health Forum. Holy Trinity is sponsoring events around meditation, centering prayer, and the inward journey. And we'll catch up with the Juno Public Libraries about events that are coming up. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Find more about the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Lisa Purvis. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.